Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Doctors of Running podcast, where we, a group of doctors of physical therapy, discuss the art and science of running and the stuff that we put on our feet. Today, I, Nathan Brown, am going to be doing a solo episode, and we are starting something a little bit new that if you all like this, this is something that we can bring back. And ultimately, what it's going to be is a little bit of a research review into a certain topic. And so what I'm going to be doing today is taking three articles that exist in literature that we think are relatively important, that are all on a similar topic. We're going to run through what each of those articles say and what they do, and then kind of talk about some of the implications for what it might mean for us as a runner, or for you as a physical therapist who works with runners, or someone in a running shoe store, and how you talk about the influence of footwear. So the topics can be so varied, and today we are going to be going into some of the research on running-related injuries. We're going to be talking about risk factors for running-related injuries, the prevalence and incidence of running-related injuries, and how we can conceptualize these when we as runners try to figure out, why am I getting injured, or why did I get injured? What sort of things should be going through your mind, and how you process what is leading to the injury that you've had? So before we get into that, what I want to invite you all to do first is to enter the giveaway that we're doing thanks to Running Warehouse. They have given us 8 $100 gift cards to give away, one per week. So this is another week where we're going to be giving away a gift card. So if you're not already, please take the time to follow us and subscribe on our podcast channels as well as on YouTube. And then once you do it, when the YouTube video comes out, which releases on Sundays, when the YouTube video comes out, you'll go to the video for this podcast, and then you'll answer the subjective question below. So the subjective this week, we want to hear from you. What research topics are you interested in? What sort of realms do you want to hear directly from the literature and kind of what it's saying? So that's our question for today. The second one that I want to throw out there, you can also answer this if you want, is when you think back and reflect on any injuries you've had in the past, what do you feel like have been the main contributors to the etiology or the cause of those injuries? I'd love to hear your perspective on what you think were the kind of those tipping points and the things that brought you to the point where you had a running related injury. All right, now with that out of the way, let's get into the topic for this week, which again is running related injuries. How often are they happening? Where are they coming from? That kind of stuff. So I have three articles for us that we're going to go through together. The first one is an oldie, but a goodie. It comes from 2007 from Van Gant and his colleagues. They put out a systematic review called Incidence and Determinants of Lower Extremity Running Injuries in Long Distance Runners, a systematic review. If you aren't familiar with what a systematic review is, what it does is it says there's all of these studies out on a certain topic, in this case, running-related injuries and the determinants of lower extremity injuries in long-distance runners. So what we want to do is, instead of just taking all of these studies in singularity, we're going to read all the studies out there, and we're going to find out which ones look at similar topics, and then give a systematic approach of analyzing all of those studies and then summarizing the results in a systematic review. So again, what this study, they read hundreds of articles, these authors did, and they made sure that the articles were of high enough quality to include and were consistent enough across each other to make sure that the results could be compared. And then they summarized the results in their systematic review. So what this study ended up doing was included 17 different articles that looked at injury prevalence and incidence and where these injuries were occurring, and then started to summarize the results. One of the things that they did was identified the common risk factors for injury that these studies assessed. So I'm going to give their list of these things, but this doesn't mean that these were found to be risk factors. These were risk factors that were analyzed as a part of this study. So they broke down the risk factors into four different categories: systemic factors, training factors, health factors, and lifestyle factors. So systemic factors are things that are just innate within you. So your age, your height, your sex, things like that. That was the systemic factors. And they would look, were there differences in injury prevalence that were found in those other 17 studies that they were analyzing? The second was the training factors. So these are going to be things like your frequency, your intensity, the distance that people were running within a session and over long periods of time. It was all about kind of those training factors and what goes into different kinds of running. They also looked at health factors. So this was looking at two main things. One of them was history of previous injury. And so they had timestamps of when these injuries happened, namely in the last year, in the last 6 months, in the last couple years. And then the other thing they looked at was kind of comorbidities or longer standing health conditions. But the way that they did that, most of the studies included in this systematic review looked at more of the comorbidities or other health factors or health conditions was through medication use, or if they reported being sick in a time frame that was close to the study, so even just a cold. But the medications were used as a marker of, do you have a health condition that is requiring you to take medications? Obviously, something to consider in there, there are plenty of health conditions that are not treated medicinally through pharmaceuticals. And there are also people who approach their care without it. So some things missing when it comes to health factors and comorbidities and whether they contributed to injury. The final section was lifestyle factors, which was kind of, what is your alcohol use? Do you smoking? What are your other activities that you're involved in? Are you just a runner, or do you also participate in soccer and tennis and these other types of sports? So they assessed all of those factors and the results from 17 different studies that looked at these sort of risk factors. And ultimately, this study came out with some pretty interesting findings. As you could kind of, if you haven't looked at systematic reviews in the past, a lot of times it's difficult to have super strong conclusions when something is complex and individualized as running, because the cause of an injury, maybe the people who were included in all these different studies, there's going to be differences. So it's going to be hard to have really hard and fast causes for injury or risk factors that were very clear. So what I'll say first are some of the ones that were a little bit lower on the confidence scale. There were small connections between these two, between these things and injury. Some of those smaller connections were, if you had an increased age, there was an increased prevalence or incidence of running-related injuries. Females tended to get injured more than males. Increased alcohol use had a higher overall dosage or a higher overall amount of running-related injuries. But they were very small and not very confident recommendations. The two things that were able to give strong correlations between these factors and running-related injuries were a history of a previous injury within the last 12 months, and if you were running more than 40 miles per week. So they found that these people with higher mileage were getting injured more often. On surface level, it makes sense that if you're running more, you have more opportunities to sustain a running-related injury, which are often in the realm of, I'm going to use the term overuse, and that's a whole complicated, loaded phrase. But that those were the two things, history of a previous injury and over 40 miles a week. A complicating factor to this, or I think that brings some nuance to it, is that there was also a protective factor for people with overall higher weekly mileage. And so this kind of gets to this conversation on lifetime miles and lifetime adaptations. So for people who had high weekly mileage for a long period of time, they're found to be a protective factor against sustaining a running-related injury compared to people who were newer runners who were also running more than 40 miles per week. So again, it's not just running 40 miles per week. It's who is running 40 miles per week and were they ready to do that? Really important thing from something like a systematic review in this nature is it's observational in nature. They did not control anything. These studies didn't try to give these people these exercises and other people no exercise and see who gets hurt. They didn't say, hey, you run 40 miles per week, you run 20 miles per week, let's see who gets injured. They didn't control anything. They're just observing. So all of these things that I just said in terms of risk factors are all correlations. They're not causations. And so although there were some potential connections in terms of correlation between previous history of injury and more than 40 miles per week and even alcohol use and things like that, it doesn't mean that those things cause injuries. It's just there's more of a connection and more a higher prevalence in people who fall into those categories. It might sound semantics, but it's important when it comes to trying to diagnose and be super confident in kind of what you're doing moving forward. So again, the biggest things from this study I kind of laid out in those large things. So that's the 2007 article. It gets cited a lot in the literature as a way to look back at the prevalence of injuries. There was two other things from this study I want to say. One of them was they looked at where do the most common injuries happen in runners. What they found was that most of the injuries overall happen at the knee, but the highest number one region of a running-related injury was the Achilles tendon, followed by patellofemoral pain syndrome, the patellar tendon, and medial tibial stress syndrome. So they kind of had those top four where your Achilles tendinopathies, pain in that Achilles tendon by the heel, followed by patellofemoral pain syndrome, which is kind of a broad scoping pain around the patella. So usually it's on the medial side, around the inside of that kneecap, then patellar tendon pain or patellar tendinopathy. That's that tendon that connects the bottom of your kneecap down to your shin bone or your tibia, and then medial tibial stress syndrome, which is all, a lot of people call it shin splints, but it's irritation to the bone in the tibia. And so those are your top regions for injury based on this systematic review. The other thing that they found is what they were looking at, what's the prevalence? How often do people get injured? And what's the incidence over a period of time? How often do things come up and how often do people get injured in a certain period of time? But they found that within a year, somewhere between 19.4 and 79.3% of runners get injured. So in these 17 studies, they found a range. Some studies said 19.4%. Some studies were up at almost 80% of runners would get injured in a given year. That's a huge range. But we'll come back to that big range in a second. I was doing some math, and if we look at the number of runners that, or number of people who are running in the United States right now, usually it's somewhere between, it's around 60 million people, 47 to 60 million. So if we go on the lower end of the number of people who run and the lower prevalence of 19.4%, that's still 9.12 million people who are getting injured per year. That's a pretty wild statistic. It's a lot of people who are getting injured. That doesn't mean they're all going to need care. And that gets into this, why does this range exist from 19.2 to 80% of people? Because that's either 2 to 10 or 8 in 10 people. And one of the things that we'll get into in the next study that we're going to talk about is how these studies define a running-related injury. Sometimes it's as simple as, did you feel pain or did you have any discomfort on a run? Sometimes that's check the box. Yes, that's a running-related injury if that's what the study defined as a running-related injury. I personally don't fall into that category of that being an injury. But just for the sake of where these studies were coming from, it can be all the way on that end of the spectrum. On the other end of the spectrum, it could be that you sought care from a professional or a medical professional because of pain that you were having related to running. So that's probably going to be those studies that are more in the 20% range, because their definition of an injury is one that they actually took the time and resources financially to go see a medical professional. So you see this big range among these 17 studies, but the point is, even if it is on that 20%, there's a lot of people getting injured and running, and we got to figure out what are these things that are causing injury and how can we conceptualize them and just be smarter as runners that we can get all these health benefits that we do this thing for anyway, instead of getting injured and not being able to participate in the thing that we love to do. All right, so that's the Van Gent article from 2007. We're going to move on to our next article, and this is much newer. This one is from this year, 2024. It just came out. It's called The Running-Related Injuries Among More Than 7,000 Runners in 87 Countries, the Garmin RunSafe Run Health Study. So if you know what Garmin is, you can kind of guess where they may have gotten this data from. So what they did is they were able to, people agreed to participate in a study across 87 countries, and they got to track whether they were having injuries. Oh, sorry, this is by Nielsen and colleagues, and it came out this year in JOSPT, the Journal of Orthopedic and Sports Physical Therapy. We'll probably link all of these three articles below. So if you don't need to write them down, we'll try to link them for you so that you can have easier access to them. So again, this is, they're looking at what sort of running related injury prevalence or percentage or ratios were there among over 7,000 runners, actually like 7,600. So pretty high amount of people participating in the study. And the way that they did it is they had Garmin data from all of these people. And they also were able to send, for anyone who agreed to participate, a weekly survey where they answered a couple questions. And so this is where we can get into that question of like, hey, how is running injury defined? And how does that influence the statistics we see of how many people are getting hurt? So in this study, I'm going to read it verbatim for you. The runners were given this question once a week. It said, in the past week, have you had a musculoskeletal injury, or have you experienced a problem to muscle, tendon, or bone that is fully or partially caused by running? And then the runners had three choices. They could either say that they were injury-free, that they were uninjured but had problems, or number three, they were injured. So they had one of those three options. So you'll notice that they have three or two main terms, injured and problems. And so they also defined those for the runners. So when they defined problem, it says it's less severe than an injury that was painful and irritating, but running continues in full. So we like to call these niggles, where you've got a little something, maybe the inside of your foot, the arch of your foot, the Achilles, your knee. It feels a little weird, but you don't back down your training. You don't back down your intensity. You just keep on moving. That's what they considered a problem. So if you had that, you would score yourself a number two. The injury was defined as more severe than a problem, which we just talked about, and is something painful and irritable, leading to a reduction in running activity. For example, volume, intensity, or frequency. So the way that this study defined an injury and the prevalence of injury that came from this later was if you had to alter your training plan at all. So it didn't include seeking care. It didn't mean stopping running completely. It could have meant that I was supposed to go do a 6-mile tempo, and then instead I was having that little niggle in my knee, so I actually just did a 3-mile tempo, or I decreased my intensity. Once you would have altered, you would have been able to score yourself differently on this study. So think about what you think that means for what was the injury prevalence or ratios that they found in this study. But before we get there, I want to tell you a little bit more about these 7,000 runners that they had in the study. So they were, and I should say this, the 2007 article from Van Gent, they also were really looking at recreational runners. It was not a competitive or elite field. It was all non-professional and recreational runners. But in this study, greater than 75% of the runners in this study ran a 5K faster than 29 minutes. So most of them fall into that range of pacing and speed. And over 50% of them were between 20 and 29 minutes. The other 25% were in the 17 to 20 minute 5K. So a lot of it would, I would consider faster runners in this study for people running less than a 30-minute mile, but most of them would consider themselves recreational. The average age of the participants were 46.3. The average deviation between this was between 36 and 56 years old. So a lot of people in my stage of life and a little bit further on. There was 76.2% of these runners were males and 22.9% were females. And this, I think, is maybe the most interesting statistic. Of the people who chose to participate, and this was voluntary, and they did kind of a convenience sampling, meaning they sent it out, and who wants to do this? 53.8% had an injury within the last 3 months. So if we look back at the Van Gent article, and we think about the fact that there was that one of the two things that could be more confidently prescribed as a risk factor was a previous injury in the last year. The fact that over 50% of these people had an injury within the last 3 months maybe speaks volumes for some of the results that we see in this study. In terms of region, I know that it said there were over 78 countries represented in this study. 96% of these countries fell within Europe or North America. There were some African countries and some South American countries, but 96% of them were in in Europe or North America. Okay, the last thing I want to tell you about these people is why they were running. So I mentioned kind of their pacing, but over 50% of the people who participated chose that the primary reason that they ran was just for health. That was their primary reason. The other largest segment, which was only 14%, were people who were trying to compete or get fit. So those were the highest other two categories, but most people in this study were just running to get fit, which I think is just makes it super applicable for most of us, and that, as that's why most people are out there running. So what did they find? They found that what they did is they got all of these statistics through this weekly survey, and then they took two main time points. And they were like, who can survive without an injury up to after 1,000 kilometers of running or 620-ish miles? And how many people can survive without an injury? What percentage of people at 2,000 kilometers of running or about 1,200 miles? So if you think about that too, in terms of timeline, you know, if you're running 25-ish miles a week, 20 to 25, you're running about 100 miles a month, which that means that if the time point for me, that's about what I run when I'm healthy. You know, this is a study that's basically looking at, did you get hurt in 6 months? Did you get hurt in 12 months? But they didn't do it time-based. Again, they did it. If you're somebody who runs half that distance, it's going to take you a year to get those 600 miles. And it would take you 2 years. So it's kind of a beautiful study in that way, where it looks at incidents based on exposure to running at these two different time points. So ultimately, what they found in this study is that after 1,000 kilometers, 57.6% of runners sustained some sort of injury as defined by the injuries definition that we just talked about, meaning that they had to alter their training plan. And at 2,000 kilometers, just under 70% got injured. So this, when we look at that previous Van Gent article, this look at 7,000 runners falls more on that upper end of the spectrum of running injuries and bringing you to that kind of 58 to 70% injury rate and prevalence, which means the survival rate was less than 50% after 1,000 kilometers, and just about 30% of people survived, quote unquote, without an injury. There's a cool graph in the study. It's a survival curve, and it looks at how many people survived without an injury as they continue to run. So I think one of the interesting caveats in this study is what they found between different countries. And I'm not going to go into the minutiae of this, but they found that certain groups of countries had significantly higher rates of injury, both at 1,000 and 2,000 kilometers, and other countries had significantly lower injury prevalence. And the difference between those two was up to 30% difference between one country and another country. So the countries the lowest risk, they had 30% less prevalence of injury, and the other ones had 30% more, which is a huge range. Some of the reasons why this could have happened in this study was because they did not validate this questionnaire. So, okay, I'm going into like the weeds on some of this stuff. So forgive me for nerding out a little bit. But one of the things that they have to do when you give out a questionnaire as a part of a study is you have to validate the instrument. And this was only validated in English. So regardless of what country you were in, you were sent the same question written in English, which means that it's possible that when somebody who maybe English is your secondary language, there could be different cultural connotations to like pain or injury. Those meanings can elucidate different meanings and experiences and interpretations, which means that they may have answered differently, not because that the experience was remarkably different, but the definition just meant a lot, a different meaning to them based on their understanding of what injury or pain is. The other thing that I'm curious about, and they didn't, again, this is an observational study, not trying to draw conclusions about the why, but it's more just what is going on. I wonder too, in different regions of the world and the people who are having more or less injuries, if there are connections between lifestyle and the tissue capacity that you develop because of that lifestyle. For example, if you live in a country where commuting by walking is your typical way to get to work, where there is much less driving commuting, maybe there's more physical labor, maybe tissue capacities in those people are increased. Or if you work an extremely physical job on the reverse end, then your running becomes this tipping point where it leads to further injury. So I just think that's a could be an interesting thing to explore is how does lifestyle play into prevalence of injury in recreational runners? All right, so we made it through two articles. We basically looked at these two broad scoping, hey, how many injuries are happening? Ultimately, there's a lot. At least 9 million people a year are getting hurt because of some sort of running-related injury. And then recently, as much as this year, that's kind of being validated and shown, hey, people are having to at least alter the amount of training that they're doing because of an injury. But neither of these were able to start talking about why do running injuries happen. And that's the third article that I want to bring us to. So this is an article from 2017, and it's kind of what's called like a conceptual framework article, where this group of researchers worked together to create a framework to try to understand running related injuries. And these frameworks can be used both, really what they're designed for, if we want to nerd out, they're designed to create testable factors from like a research perspective. So you can use this conceptual framework and then you can control for certain variables within that construct. And then you can try to answer some further questions. But what you can also use it for is to conceptualize if you're a PT or if you're a runner trying to figure out, hey, why am I hurt? This framework, you can look at the factors on there and say, hey, have I had major changes in any of these factors? If you have, then that could help you maybe identify what sort of changes that you could make in the future to avoid it from happening again. So this study is called A Framework for the Etiology of Running Related Injuries. Etiology, like the cause, the root, where is it coming from? And this is Bertelsen and colleagues in 2017. So they again go back and highlight that all of this sort of injury is going to really depend on so many factors that it's very individualized. They kind of recognize that in this part of their study, they, you know, the type of runner, how much experience they have, the injury experiences that they've had in the past, how long do these studies take to follow up? How do they define injuries? That's going to change your injury prevalence. Like it's just going to be so different because of who you include in these studies. So what they want to do is figure out how can we create a framework to study this a little bit more focused in certain populations. So here's the framework. We're going to talk about it. So they have kind of four different categories. One of them is the structure-specific load capacity. So what is the capacity of the structure? Let's just say somebody has, and you're trying to problem solve this on your own, let's say somebody has an Achilles injury, because that's the highest prevalence according to that Van Gent article. If somebody has Achilles, you're asking, what's the load capacity of that structure? Meaning, how many times could I do a calf raise before the Achilles tendon fatigues to the point where it becomes inflamed and irritated? So what's the capacity of my Achilles tendon? Section B is the structure-specific cumulative load. So this is going to bring in a lot of those training factors that we talked about in the Van Gent article. So how many times did I run, which means how many times did I impact load, and how am I running? Am I running on my forefoot? Am I running in a minimalist shoe? That's going to change the cumulative load over the course of one run, over the course of 1 week, over the course of 6 months. What's the cumulative load on a specific structure? So that's kind of the second section. The third section is related to the structure specific load capacity in general. And that's looking at what's the reduction in that load capacity over the course of a single session or the session of weeks or months. So if you haven't thought about this, it's worth thinking about. When you exercise, when you lift weights, when you go for a run, you don't get stronger, you get weaker. We are breaking down our muscles. We are utilizing energy. We're depleting the energy that exists within muscles and all of those things. So within a session, within a run, within a lifting session, you're getting weaker. You're decreasing the capacity of the structure. So when all of those factors, the current capacity of the structure, the reduction that you brought it through by going and running, and the cumulative load, when all of those things work together to exceed part A, which is the load capacity, that's when you're going to get an injury. So another way to say this that I think that they summarize super well in the article is that injury occurs as the result of the runner possessing multiple risk factors and then participating in running under certain circumstances to a degree where the structure's load is exceeded. So I'm going to put this another way too, just because I think that this is like a lot of word vomit, but I think that there's a pretty easy way to conceptualize how I think about running related injuries and how this article conceptualizes it in the framework. Basically, they're saying if your running demands exceed your physical status, you're going to end up having a running related injury. If you put I'm not a big fisherman, but I know that there are certain like pounds that each fishing line can tolerate. If a fish that goes beyond that poundage of pull comes on there, you're going to snap the line because the demand of the fish is higher than the physical status of the fishing line. In the same way in running, we're saying that if your running demands, the demand you put through all the tissues exceed your current physical status, you're going to have a running related injury. I think what's super important is that our physical status is not static. Any given day, we can have a higher or lower physical status. The effects of our demands and running that we put on it a week ago can still influence your physical status a week later, depending on how intense it was. So what I want to talk about really quick are what sort of things fall under running demands, what sort of things fall under physical status. So under running demands, it's going to be some of the things that we talked about from training factors in that first article. Things like your weekly mileage or the duration of the running that you did over the course of a week. You're going to talk about your training intensity. So how high did your heart rate get and how long was it there for that period of time? It's going to be talking about your frequency. Are you running daily? Are you a 3 times a week person? Are you a 2 times a week person? It's going to be the influence of frequency is going to depend on your cumulative time running and your tissue adaptations over time, but we'll get into that in a second. But running frequency is a part of your running demand equation. What terrain you're on is part of your running demand equation. If you're normally running on flat surfaces, but then you go to these big hills, the demand on our body changes when we're running downhill versus running uphill. There are different biomechanical reasons or demands that get put on our body, which means that different structures are stressed. And footwear selection, which we obviously love to talk about on this podcast, that is a factor influencing your running demands. If you're wearing minimalist footwear, there is a higher demand on the bones in your feet, as we've seen from all of the increased, for people who don't transition well, there's a higher risk for stress fractures in the feet because there's a different demand in that sort of footwear. Whereas when you put on a super shoe, there's another new demand. It shifts load away from the foot. So you might have potential for injury higher up because the demand is higher up high and it's lower down at the foot. Finally, running demands are going to depend on your biomechanics. So I have the opportunity and privilege to work with a lot of university athletes right now through my job. And when I'm working with students and we're analyzing their gait, we're using a 3D gait analysis with all of the runners on the cross country and track teams. When I work with the students, we talk about how there isn't a right way to run because it's not that there isn't a right way to run, but running different ways shifts where the demand is on the body. And if those structures aren't ready to handle it, then that mechanics for them may be problematic, or it's something that they should really lean into. So there's no wrong way to run biomechanically, but understanding that your biomechanics help dictate which structures have more demand on them. All right, and now let's talk about physical status and some of the things that play on that side of the equation. So if all those running demands, your mileage or the time on your feet and the terrain you're running on, your biomechanics, if it exceeds the physical status, which is going to be influenced by these following things, that's where you're going to have injuries. So physical status is going to include things like your running experience. Are you new within the first 2 years? I didn't mention this, but that Van Gen article did talk about new runners in the first 2 years having a much higher risk of injury than those who have more experience. It also talked about the people who have a chronic increased running mileage per week, having a protective factor. That's because over years and years and years of training, your bones adapt, your tendons adapt, especially if you're supplementing it with the right sort of strength training. Previous injuries are another part of your physical status. If you had a recent hamstring strain, that hamstring load capacity is going to be lower than it was prior to that injury. And if you don't rehab it all the way, it could be problematic. What sort of sleep habits do you have? And this is where I said your physical status is not static. You could have had a great week of sleep, and then you can have one poor night of sleep, and that can really decrease the physical status and the healing that happens and the reset of the cortisol in your body and all of these things that happen when we sleep. If it doesn't happen, you're in a new state of physical status that day, which is why sometimes with the runners that I work with as a coach, if they have a period where sleep is not coming easy, we'll pull back on some of the workouts until they get the sleep that they need, and then we ramp things back up. Anxiety and depression are part of your physical status. We had an episode probably a year ago talking a bit about anxiety and depression and sleep and some of these recovery-related things. Stress is stress. And so if you are in a very stressful season of life, I think about the season when I had just graduated and we had our first kid, and just like what it was like to not get sleep and learning how to be a dad and starting a new job and moving into a new house. I had these huge life events that were happening that took a lot of demand of my mind and my heart and my time. And there was a lot of stress related to that. Those things can play a role in your physical status. Again, that can go up and down depending on where you're at that day. Nutrition and hydration, two seemingly obvious but very important factors where if those things are not dialed in, your physical status is going to dip down. And I feel like it's, again, it's pretty obvious to say, but if you're starting to train for a new distance, your first 5K, your first 10K, a marathon, half marathon, whatever it is, and you're increasing these demands of your running, but you're not matching it by increasing your nutrition and hydration, you're having this like static physical status, but increased running demand, and you can run into that running demands exceeding your physical status. Then other physical factors like strength and mobility. Are you strong enough to handle running? Do you have the mobility to move through motion that needs to happen with running? Or are you having to compensate and put extra stress on other structures? There's a lot of things that play into our physical status. So if we go back to the conceptual framework, they're basically saying if you have a lot of these factors, maybe you didn't sleep well, it's been a really stressful time at work, and you know what, you just like didn't get to eat a lot the night before because you were getting a lot of work done and you didn't eat like you normally would, and then you go out the next day and you do the same workout that you've always done, your running demands didn't change, but your physical status had maybe taken enough of a hit where it brought you to a new level where your demands outweighed your physical status. And I think that's why this framework is really helpful, because you can think about, where am I at today? How have all of these main factors of my sleep, my anxiety, my nutrition, hydration, have I been doing my strength training routine? Is my mobility good? How much experience as a runner do I have? Am I new? Maybe that means I can't ramp things up as quickly as somebody else who's been running for, you know, 30 years, and they've ran, you know, 50 marathons over those 30 years, but they haven't been training a lot. They might be able to ramp up way quicker because of these cumulative loads. It's helpful to think, how's my physical status today? What can my body handle? What sort of changes have I been making in my running demands? Are they exceeding my current physical status? Do I need to back things down because I haven't been getting enough food in? I haven't been drinking enough. I have so much stress going on. It's in practice of being honest with ourselves as runners and figuring out, where am I at? What sort of things do I need to do to make sure that I'm matching those two things together? All right. So wrapping up those three articles, talking about the prevalence of running-related injuries and then conceptualizing how do they happen. The last note that I want to make before I go into my final section here is that if you're a physical therapist or other healthcare provider working with runners, I also love this framework because so much of the conversation in working with runners doesn't need to center on those last couple physical status things like strength and mobility. That's kind of our wheelhouse, but I think it's so important to have them be self-assessing all of these other realms of how they exist as a runner, and just bringing them on a journey of self-discovery in analyzing these different factors that can be part of why they came to you in the first place with an injury. It's got to be holistic. It's got to be all-encompassing. So the last thing that I wanted to do is talk about the most common mistakes that I see that keep people from getting to the starting line for their race. Based on the conversation and the blabbing that I've done for the last almost 40 minutes, these might sound obvious at this point in terms of my perspective and where I come from in working with runners, but I think that they're worth saying. I think one of the most common mistakes is that people do too much too soon. They ramp up their running demands because they say, you know what, I want to run a half marathon in a certain amount of time, but it's my first half marathon. So what people start to do is they train based on where they want to be versus where they are right now. So for example, if I wanted to go, like when I did this to myself, I wanted to run an hour and a half marathon, half marathon, and I'd never done that before. And I had ran one half marathon, but it was like 5 years earlier and I had no idea what I was doing. So what I did is I found a training plan online and I was like, okay, I want to run an hour and a half marathon, half marathon, which means that, you know, I need to be doing my pacing at like a 650 to be able to do that and accomplish that goal. So I started running a lot of my runs, not all of them, but a lot of my runs down at that sub 7 pace. Or when there was a tempo, I'd run it down at a 630. I would just put myself as though I was already in shape to do the thing that I wanted to do 3 months from now. And so we tend, not everybody, but a lot of people tend to do too much too soon and start to take the goal that they want to be in 3 months, 6 months, even a year and say, because I want to run a sub 4 marathon, I need to start training at 9 minutes per mile all the time now. And that's just not how it works. You train where you're at, not where you want to be. And if you train where you're at now, you will more gradually increase your running demands so that your physical status can come along for the ride. Your body needs to go through cardiovascular and musculoskeletal adaptations to make sure that you're tolerating the running that you want to do. So mistake number one, doing too much too soon and trying to shoot for your goal instead of training exactly where you're at. The second one is that people don't fully rehab a previous injury. And I would also put that kind of slash not listening to your body. And so as we noticed in that Van Gent article, one of the two things that was a high risk factor for running related injuries was a previous injury. And as we noticed in that most recent article from 2024, over 50% of the people had already come in injured, which probably meant that they were part of that group that got re-injured during the study. In fact, again, a little minutia thing is that there was 3 to 5% of people within the study who reported an injury on the first week, which means that they didn't start the study healthy. So again, the second problem that people have is that they do not fully rehab a previous injury. If you have, I had mentioned hamstrings before. But I just because Achilles are so common, Achilles tendon irritation and injuries, we're going to talk about that. So if somebody comes in to me and they have had a history of Achilles tendon, we want to, when I bring them through testing, I bring them through maximal endurance Achilles, like calf raise testing to make sure that their Achilles has endurance. I also want to bring them through power testing and making sure that they can tolerate bounding and that they can also lift very heavy and tolerate those loads. When it comes to a tendon-related injury, we've talked about this on the podcast a lot, it can take up to 9 months for the collagen, which is that like tensile structure. So when we talk about physical status of the structure itself, if you really want a strong tendon after a tendinopathy and tendon injury, you need to do your rehab for 9 months. You can't give up. And many people forsake that. And then it might be their Achilles that gives out again, but it might be something completely different because they're compensating due to the body avoiding use of that structure. Same thing is true. If you end up having a pretty significant hamstring strain, you're going to potentially develop some very early weakness and atrophy of the hamstring and even of the gluteal muscles. If you don't fully rehab and get yourself back, small adaptations and compensations are going to be problematic. The final issue that I think that people that keeps people from the starting line is that they overemphasize the 1% instead of focusing on the 99% that is very important. So what I mean by the 1% is people overemphasize the need to do foam rolling, the need to the need to have certain running shoes, the need to go get massages, to use sauna, even biomechanics, and overemphasizing that. I think that people put so much attention to the 1% that they don't pay attention to the 99, which this is such a boring answer, but what's your sleep like? Are you eating the right foods and are you eating enough to fuel the demands that you're being put on your body? Are you doing some sort of strength routine? Are you tempering your runs and not trying to reach for where you want to be, but training where you're at? It's all about that 99% and not the 1% of fancy things. All right, so there's our research review on running-related injuries and the most common mistakes that keep people from getting to the starting line healthy. I am really curious to hear what y'all think about this format and kind of what depth you want us to go into these research studies. So in addition to the subjective questions from before, we'd love your feedback on if you want to see this format of podcast continue, some deeper dives into some of the literature. And if so, what literature do you want and what depth do you want us to go into it? So we appreciate you all. If you want to check out more of our stuff, you can go to doctorsofrunning.com and we have everything there, from all the links to our podcast episodes, all of the articles that we're writing on shoes, and our reviews of other biomechanics and rehabilitation related topics. Talk to y'all later.